Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar.
Hey.
He's JD Bunkus. Tooped up in the studio today.
Yeah.
It's cold.
Hey.
It's chilly.
If they're cold, you're cold. Or you're cold, they're cold. Get those ears in. It's a dumb meme.
I didn't get that one.
Okay.
It's about the people who wear their toques but have their ears outside their toques.
Those like hipster hats that are really rolled up.
Yes, a tall toque.
Yeah, I don't know anything about those. I definitely don't own any. Have any pictures of me in the MoMA Instagram or anywhere else.
I'm going to go look.
Yeah, you guys do your Instagram thing. I'm going to talk to Stephen Brunt of the Fan Drive Time Show. Stephen, good morning. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, Blake. How you doing? Hi, guys.
Doing well. We're going to talk some serious stuff, but first I want to start off by so JD had Ben come on the show a couple weeks ago and play up the awkwardness of we're JD's new co-hosts and Ben's his ex. How are things going with Ben, and just how over the moon is Ben to be working with you now by contrast?
He seems very happy, Blake. He seems very happy, kind of carefree, you know. He comes in every day with it. He's early and really early every day. Comes in with a big smile on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was in, we go on at 5. I think he was in at 1 yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That's how happy he is.
Wow.
Well, I think it's more to do with, you know, he gets to get away from his family and he pretends it's harder to do what he does.
That's the
ultimate sell, is that he's oh, no, I got to go to work today. I got to really sweat it out with our 2-hour show, our whole 2 hours. Our show is double, okay? Mm-hmm. We're out here grinding. No wonder he's happy. He sees this reality and he's like, that could be me. I'm sleeping in, working 2 hours, setting up. What does he even have to do? His whole job is just tee up Stephen Brunt. That's it. Tee up Stephen. Hey, don't step on Stephen. That's your only rule. Wow, what a hard life for him.
He's doing a great job.
Yeah.
He's doing a great job. That's what I have to say. Yeah.
That's what, hey, it's a great thing to be able to tee up Stephen Brunt. This is why you're the guy, and this is why we brought you in this morning. In seriousness, Stephen, there's a report from the Globe and Mail's Andrew Willis yesterday that Rogers is, quote, considering selling some of its stake in the Toronto Blue Jays and the stadium. Options under consideration for the Blue Jays and the Rogers Centre include selling a minority stake in the ball club, spinning off the team, or raising money by selling tracking shares. Again, that's from Andrew Willis, the Globe and Mail. I guess let's kind of funnel this and start off very broad. What was your reaction to seeing this piece? And I'm sure you spent a lot of time talking to people yesterday. What is your kind of vibe on what this, the legs this story might have?
Well, two things first. Number one, Andy Willis is a great reporter. At the Globe. I've known Andy for a long time and I worked with him at the Globe. So he's a tremendous reporter. Number two, I have no idea what tracking shares are. So don't ask me to explain them. I think what my reaction is that the notion of the Blue Jays or the Rogers sports assets, more accurately, being spun off into a separate entity has been kicking around for several years now. And I think it's real. I think there's a lot of logic that supports it, including, just the fact that that part of Rogers doesn't really fit with the rest of the company. And it's, it was the Jays and the stadium were bought by Ted Rogers back in the day because, number one, it was a pretty good deal. Number two, nobody really wanted to buy the team in Toronto, nobody else. So, he kind of added that to his portfolio, but it didn't really line up. He wasn't in the sports business, and he was in the content business to a degree, but they didn't even call it that in those days. So it's always been kind of an odd fit. And, you've got this massive kind of telco communications company with a little sports operation, although, it seems big to us. But, in terms of the context of Rogers, it's tiny, appended to it. And there has been talk about, would it make more sense to have, a model like the one they have in New York with Madison Square Garden? And I Shai Davidi in his piece on sportsnet.ca alluded to that today, that, that the Dolans did that in New York where they split off. It was part of Cablevision, their bigger company. But they split off MSG and the sports teams and the sports media part of it. So that's been kicking around. Attaching it to the Shaw purchase, I don't know. I don't think it's imminent. I don't think it's going to happen, in time to fund the Shaw purchase. That I don't think it's going to happen in the next few months. But I think it's going to happen. I think at some point down the road, I think it's going to happen. What form it takes, whether you can get the MLSE stake in there or that's impossible. Because, of course, that came up, you know, you recall, I think, in the Toronto Star's reporting on the Masai deal, the notion of Rogers trying to find a way to take that stake out and put it into a separate company was part of that story. So there's a lot of smoke here. You know, a lot of smoke here. And again, it lines up with things that have been talked about, not just over the last few months, but over the last few years.
Yeah, as an outsider, the MSG model makes a little bit of sense. And for anyone, if anyone's curious, just briefly, what a tracking stock is it's similar to that. But, you know, so the Braves have one where Liberty Media sells off stock in just a particular division of the company rather than, so you wouldn't, you know, it would be possible for you to not buy Rogers stock, but you could buy stock in the sports part of the Rogers arm. So that seems complicated and a little too difficult to explain over the radio, but I do think the, you know, the MSG idea is interesting of, hey, Rogers breaks off a sports specific arm that way. The other thing that flows from this, and it was noted in Andy's column, is, you know, for a long time, there's been discussion of, hey, would the Blue Jays be better off with an individual as an owner rather than, you know, a corporation or this kind of faceless board? But it's mentioned as a possibility in the article that Edward Rogers could be that individual owner. And I know that's going to raise eyebrows for people that, what, is this just an accounting trick that Rogers won't own the Blue Jays? It'll just be Edward Rogers. But do you see that as a possibility? And how would that change things? You know, if you're a Blue Jay fan, if this goes from a Rogers property to an Edward Rogers property?
I think it's a real possibility. The short answer is, I think there's a whole bunch of reasons to think that. Like, you know, first of all, kind of separating, let's separate the personal from the bigger story here. But, you know, the sports, you know, the Blue Jays as a part of Rogers, as a part of the larger Rogers, a publicly traded company, they're treated like, it's hard to treat sports like just like other businesses because it doesn't work that way. You know, investment and return, it's far less predictable. You know, on a quarterly basis, if you're trying to kind of say, well, if we invest this, then this will happen. It's, you know, pretty tricky to do that with sports because there are so many things out of your control. The big one being winning, you know, it tends to change things. And in a sport where there's no salary cap in terms of baseball, like if you spend $200 million, will you win the World Series? Well, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So it having an individual owner, who is willing to investment spend in sports for other reasons, right? The desire to win, the desire for glory, the desire for, you know, like go through sports and think of the individual owners, you know, who have, you know, probably spent more than the team was bringing in order to try and win something. There's a long list. Now, most of those owners are also making tons of money in equity, that their franchise value is going up and up and up every year. So the money in, money out, maybe not the most significant equation here. But, you know, think of what Mike Ilitch in his last years did in Detroit, for instance, to try and win a World Series with the Tigers and to try and win with the Red Wings. Like, he threw a lot of money at those teams. He spent a lot of money, and that was personal. And the reason we talk about Mike Ilitch, you know, the reason you know his name is not because he had a pizza company. It's because he owns sports teams. That's part of it too. You know, it's a bit of a legacy thing. So the Jays have never had that. You know, the weird thing is from their very inception, they have been owned by, faceless owners. In the early days, any Jays fan from the olden days would not be able to tell you who in Labatt's was in charge of the Jays or the CIBC, or would not identify Howard Webster. Innerbrew, who owned them after Labatt's, was a, you know, faceless Belgian brewer. No one knew. And, you know, even in the Rogers context, there's never been a person, right? It's never been a person. This would be the first time it would potentially be a person.
The franchise valuation is such an interesting part of this from both a, you know, bigger picture, but also from an accounting perspective where, yeah, it's hard to monetize that or it's hard to account for that unless you intend to sell the team, where the Rogers bought the Blue Jays back in 2000 for $165 million, and now they're being valued somewhere around $2 billion, but that doesn't really mean anything unless you actually sell the team off or kind of silo it off at least. And it's an interesting one of, like, would this have made sense for the Rogers family to do back when the price was $165 versus when it was $2 billion? A company that people, I think, are going to look to as a possibility here, because Rodgers is already involved, and just because there's, you know, probably some economies of scale with one entity owning a lot of sports teams. Do you see MLSE being related to this situation at all? Whether that's a, you know, hey, Rodgers sells off a, you know, splinters off a part of the Jays and it becomes more like an MLSE share, or I don't know specifically what that would look like, but do you see potential MLSE involvement here, or is Rodgers going to want to keep this exclusively a Rodgers property?
It's a really good question, and it's, you know, I don't know. You know, it was interesting, again, another story, this story that Elliot had about John Henry and the Fenway Sports Group kicking the tires at MLSE, talking about a merger. You know, they own the Red Sox, they own Liverpool Football Club. You know, now that, I'm not sure how that would have worked, because you would have had, you know, shared ownership of two MLB franchises, and I know that wouldn't fly. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. So, but that, you know, that was fascinating. Yeah, nothing I've heard kind of includes folding the Jays into MLSE. Everything I've heard is about the Jays kind of going their own way, you know, potentially with us attached, you know, Sportsnet, the sports media properties, you know, extracting that chunk and I say extracting that chunk of Rodgers' equity in MLSE and putting it into another company. I'm not sure that's possible. So this feels to me very much like a Blue Jays stadium, maybe Sportsnet company. You know, probably owned by Edward Rodgers.
Edward Rodgers acquires J.D. Bunkus and the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, though, this is what I'm... Whenever I'm brought to this stuff, I always care, like, obviously about me, because, like, who doesn't? Like, let's be honest here. I'm always going to care about what's going to happen for me or what's going to happen for a media division. But no, but when it comes to the fans and when it comes to the actual... the nuts and bolts of what this means for a sports fan, I got to think that it's a positive... Because, yeah, Rodgers, the name's already on the building. You've already got a statue outside of the building. Now it becomes, I feel, it's got to be anyways, in part, more about you now. Like, this is more of a, and again, this is me just playing the I watch Succession. And so let me, like, try to read between the lines on some of this. If it is Ed Rodgers who buys the team, that has to make me feel somewhat excited if I'm a Blue Jays fan, because this is a guy who is involved in baseball. And now it's no longer like this is the Ted Rogers team. This is the Ed Rogers team. Is that sort of your read on it too? Like if we're looking at ways that are, hey, which one is the best if I'm a Blue Jays fan? We're trying to play the who are we actually rooting for here? Is it not that?
I think from a fan point of view, an individual owner, as long as it's not Harold Ballard, is a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Like an individual owner who's not trying to actively destroy the team is a good thing, because you want... You know, you want the owner to spend like, you know, to act like a fan kind of, right? You want them to spend romantically, to try and win stuff. That's the best outcome. Now, you know, to be honest, you know, from a Jays point of view as a fan, you don't have a lot to complain about the last two or three years in terms of money. They have, you know, just, you can't argue with it. They have the Ryu contract, the Springer contract, the Barrios extension, you know, in the middle of a pandemic. They have invested. And that, I think that speaks to the fact that the Jays and Mark Shapiro have been able to convince the board of that their plan is sound, and that even if in the short term, you know, it was a bit risky because you weren't selling any tickets, that down the road it's going to pay off. So they have invested in, you know, in talent in the last 3 years, even in precarious circumstances. But yeah, in general, you know, I don't think you want your team's fate tied up in the bottom line of a much larger company. It's just, you know, that, like, Rodgers is a massive company, and people say, well, they're the richest owner in baseball, which they are in theory, but they're not a baseball company. They're not a sports company. They're not a content company, except in this tiny little sliver. So the larger goals of the company are not tied up in the Jays. If you had a company where the fate of the Jays was the primary business and you had an owner with the resources who was invested in that, both, you know, in terms of money and emotionally and in terms of legacy, I think from a fan point of view, that would be a good thing, whoever that was.
Or speaking of investing, do you think that this will impact any of the offseason moves that the Blue Jays are trying to make?
I don't think so, Alex. I think there's a plan. They're operating, you know, you can only kind of, you know, assume things from the outside the way they're operating in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But I think they have a budget, and I think they have a plan, and they seem... you know, not quite like money's burning a hole in their pocket, but they seem pretty flush right now. I think they're going to be aggressive in the offseason market. So, yeah, I think that's been approved and by the current under the current structure. So, you know, I think Mark Shapiro has built a lot of trust with the board and with Edward Rogers in particular, and they've been greenlit to you know, to be aggressive and trying to win a World Series. So that's, you know, from a fan point of view, that's good news. Now, does that mean they're going to hit the luxury tax? I doubt it, but I think, you know, at some point this team is going to have the highest payroll that it's ever had, you know, sometime in the next 2 years.
This is really fascinating to me, especially, again, I keep coming back to the same thing where it's like your name's on the building. It's already affiliated with your family if you win, right? Like, you do get a lot of the perks, but then all of a sudden, if it is you, let's just play this out a little bit. Like, if it is you, that it is Ed Rogers, and you become the owner of this team, I feel as though you're opening yourself up to more scrutiny than you are positivity unless you win. Like, I don't know. It just feels like all of a sudden you're exposed. You're already getting all the benefits. You're already getting the fact that if you win, it's Rogers. You know, it might be the company, it might be the board or whatever, but it's like, it's already you. You're the one. Like, I would assume that if they present the commissioner's trophy or whatever, the people that are going to be there, it's like, it's already going to be you. You're already going to be there. Like, I'm having a tough time outside of, like, the actual business machinations of it, seeing, like, the upside for him personally.
Because if you win, that's the point, the legacy part, right? If you win and you're the guy that gets the commissioner's trophy and they have one of those big parades like they had for the Raptors, and you're the guy who brought the World Series to Toronto, you know, with some help, that's, you know, flags fly forever, right? Like, that's what, you know, look, sports ownership, you know, has been a pretty good business for a lot of people, bottom line wise. But, you know, why do you know who Jerry Jones is, right? Like, why do you know, for better or worse, who Dan Snyder is? Why do you know who John Henry is? Any, you know, go through those names. If those guys were, you know, in the widget manufacturing business, which many of them were in order to build their fortunes, we wouldn't talk about him. But you talk about the guy who owns the sports franchise in town. You talk about him when they win a championship or when they, you know, do something terrible. It's about, you know, it's about putting, it is, it's exactly, I know the family name is on this stuff, but it's about putting your name on this.
Yeah.
And being the guy. And I think, you know, history would suggest that's pretty sexy.
I feel like we're going to be working in the widget family business or whatever.
Make those widgets.
I was like, I don't know how to make a widget. I don't think I should be trusted around heavy machinery. Like, that's all. I'm not ready for that pivot.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the factory thing before.
I can't go. You can't go back.
Wasn't widgets, but yeah. I'm not trying to widget again. Stephen Brunt, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it. I'm sure you guys will talk even more on the Fan Drive Time show about this with you and Ben Ennis at 5 o'clock every day on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Steven, thanks so much.
All right, guys. JD, I'll give Ben your best.
Oh, I was going to say, put in a word for me at the widget factory, please. Like, that would be really good. It's like, you know, let them know that I have the Brunt endorsement. That would really help me out. Thanks, man.
See you guys.
Stephen Brunt, the absolute luxury we have to bring a guy like that on when there's stories like this to kind of sift through. A lot going on there. At the risk of getting fired, the one thing that I didn't want to jump in and, you know, when you asked Stephen about, hey, is that a not a good thing for the fan base, having an individual owner who's more passionate and more like personally invested? I would say in general, yes. However, that was the same guy who didn't think Masai was worth it. So maybe, I don't know.
I think that those are really separate things, though.
Probably.
Because this is talking about something where you are, if anything, actually, to me, it's like, if that report is true about Masai, this makes me even more excited in a weird way about the Blue Jays, because it's like, oh, this guy wants to have like all of the control and all of the spotlight. And so he's going to pump money into the Blue Jays to make it like, hey, see, I'm the one that's like, I almost feel like if you're the individual owner of the Blue Jays and you sink a ton of money in, and I know maybe this is a bit of a leap, but you win a World Series and all of a sudden history looks back a little bit on that Raptors championship as a little bit more you than some like just Bell Media, like what's the face of Bell Media? So it's like right now, the face of the ownership group was Tannenbaum, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you had. You
so
have
you're
Tanev.
Saying you have MLSE over here, and then the draw is, hey, I won with the Raptors as part of MLSE, a part of that ownership group, but also I won with my own thing.
No, I'm saying that if you're a Blue Jays fan, the reason why you would have optimism, again, there's no way of having this conversation where you don't sound like you're a complete shill, but...
Well, yeah, we work where we work.
But I mean, unless you're you who said that thing, but anyways, I would just look at it and say, if he's interested in actually buying this team, he, like I already mentioned to Brunt, his name is already on the building. Mm-hmm. His family has a statue out in front. It's the only statue that's there. I got to imagine that he commissions a statue tomorrow and it's going to get done somewhere. He can get one. But the idea here has to be that, hey, not only does this make sense potentially for the business, but that it's an added ego play, or that it's an added, hey, upside play for it just being me. It's not the company. It's not anything to do with my dad. It's not anything to do with anything other than I bought this team. It's all my money and I'm the face of it. I'm responsible for it. It's all coming down to me. It's no longer like the Rogers family. It's Ed Rogers. Like this is a way of kind of potentially stepping out from just like the family name and creating your own name. And so, yes, mm-hmm. if I'm a Blue Jays fan, the reason why I would look at that and say it's optimistic is because, again, like, you already have a lot of upside. The only reason to do it would be to continue in that way, because you're not just doing it to say, oh, well, now I'm going to be cheap with it and then be hated. Like, that's right. Not happening. That makes no sense.
No, there's too much awareness there of the public side of things. So,
Ailish, you're going to try to buy the team with your chip
Lexus money,
like all
stuff,
your Lexus,
my
all
Lexus
the sponsorship
money.
Deals that you're curating?
I will say, Ed, you have my email. You want to talk John Gray, Michael Conforto, Jose Ramirez,
Luis
Castillo.
He's
going to
have
Castillo.
Your email after that Masai chirp. That's for sure.
Like, but is Masai even a good executive? You better
start tooting that hard.
We'll see what Ed Rogers can do with the Blue Jays roster. That brings us to the time of the show where we got to chew on something. It's time for something to chew on.
Blake's Bones.
Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. My bones ground for bread.
That's such a good visual. I've never heard that saying before. Did you make that up?
No. Oh, you're a couple episodes behind.
Oh. Yeah. I'll grind his bones for my bread.
It's
Succession?
It's a Logan, yeah.
Okay.
So just quickly, to build off of that conversation with Stephen Brunt, and JD's point about why maybe you're optimistic if you're a Blue Jays fan about an individual owner. The Toronto Blue Jays, per Spotrac, ranked 12th in salary last year in baseball. Of the 11 teams ahead of them, 9 have either individual and family ownership or a corporate ownership group where the face of it is very clear, like John Henry with Fenway Sports Group. 9 of the 11 teams that outspent the Blue Jays had that type of ownership structure. The only ones who didn't were the Dodgers, who are a bit of a gray area because it's Guggenheim, which is like a group of 6 to 10 big individual investors, and like Magic Johnson's in there and Billie Jean King. And the other one is the Braves and Liberty Media, who have that tracking stock thing that we quickly touched on there. So something to chew on. 9 of the 11 teams who outspent the Blue Jays last year have the ownership structure that we just talked about the Blue Jays potentially moving toward. Not that I'm saying the Jays haven't spent, because obviously you're 12th in payroll and all the reporting has been the payroll is going to go up this year, but something to chew on. Yeah. Maybe it goes even higher.
Something else to chew on. Sawdust working at the widget factory.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
Coming home with dry mouth every day. Like, doing a lot of that.
Yeah. I'll tell you. I'm not going back to the factory work. What we are going back to, though, is the text line. We're going to be taking your texts.
Oh, yeah.
590-590. Send us your takes, your questions, probably 400 things Ailish will read out about chips. Mm-hmm. That's coming up after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Good morning. Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
It sure is. It's Text Line Tuesday.
That's Ailish Forfar. I'm Blake Murphy. He's JD Bunkus.
It's also a Tuesday where we're trying to help Ailish come up with items to fill her cart at Costco so that we can get those chips.
Yeah, so we figured out we can order the chips with Instacart.
Yeah.
And I have multiple bags in my cart.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be like, oh, what else do you get from Costco? Yeah. Like toilet paper, cat food. Do like, we might as well get lots of things.
I know the dynamic here a lot of the time is you guys talk about stuff and then I find the stat or...
Yeah.
Whatever, but I do find it a little weird that that even is applying to food now, where I had to find the chips for you guys.
Okay, yeah. Relax.
I don't. I'm not unrelaxed.
You really holy, want the fame from defensive. Finding the chips, though.
Holy defensive.
The chip finding fame. You know,
look. I'm just saying, in that Costco order, there should be a finder's fee. And I don't.
Yeah. What do you want?
I don't like chips.
We're trying
so
to. We're trying to get you your finder's fee.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about a 40 count of cashmere premium 2-ply bathroom tissue.
Yeah, how about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Your bum bum.
Stuff. Yeah. Bum bum bum.
Yum yum yum. Bum bum bum.
That's great because the toilet paper I'm stealing from here is yeah. Not,
oh, God.
Is not up yeah. To snuff.
I'm not even joking. When I first started working here, I was an intern. I was so poor that I used to like unspool it and take it home in a bag.
Come on.
I'm dead serious. I'm
KD.
Dead serious. Yeah, I would unspool
that's
it.
That's awful.
I'd stuff
the look on Daniele's face
bag.
Right now. He's so disgusted in you.
That's so awful.
You guys don't know what it's like.
I do know what it's like. I will share some stories off the air about my extremely broke days, and I'm just not going to incriminate myself.
Yeah,
on the air,
I've
done enough to maybe get
Ed
fired
Rogers.
Already on this show. So.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're already tracking us. This show is going to end with like
just me.
5 minutes of Blake playing music and apologizing to Ed Rogers.
Yeah. No, it's going to be
groveling.
The fan morning show is just going to end, period. Yeah. JD's going to get canned for stealing toilet paper.
Yeah.
I'll get canned for that. And then Ailish will get canned because the sales team can't sell anything anymore.
Statute
because,
limitations
because
on stealing toilet paper.
She keeps giving all the free promotion away.
Oh, Mitch from Orangeville. Uh-huh. Forget what they're called, but it's a big tub of pretzels stuffed with peanut butter. I love those. He's talking about what to order from Costco.
I know.
So thank you so much,
peanut
Mitch.
Butter.
Yeah, they're so good.
Pretzels stuffed with peanut butter?
We used to get them on all our road trips when we're in the States.
Mm.
Here they are. I pulled them up. Yep, they're in the cart now. But they're big. They're like a pretzel, like a square, not like the, you're thinking of the design.
Can't
thanks,
wait
Mitch.
For you to spend $1,000.
Yeah, my card is at like $300.
At Costco to try to justify this like $10 delivery charge. But I remember when I was a kid and I went to Costco and I got like, you remember those marshmallow bananas?
That sounds disgusting.
They were disgusting. But
marshmallows
at the time,
are...
I know.
Ugh.
But at the time, for some reason, I thought, hey, I'm so into these. And I like now if I even look at one of those, if I even see one of those, it makes me feel completely nauseous. I think it ruined candy for me. Honestly, I don't really eat candy. I love chocolate. And I know people say that is candy, but it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love chocolate. Actual candy, I have zero interest in. Like Skittles, Starburst, all that stuff. Nothing. Does nothing for me.
Hmm. You know what does something for me? The
pretzels.
Text line Tuesday. Yeah. Well, also
okay,
pretzels.
Okay, careful. You're setting up the Simps a little too.
Oh, no.
A little too hot there. Yeah.
There was a couple offering to drop off chips. I appreciate that, but I need a Simp. God. That's why I'll get fired. Okay, so where do you want to go with the text line
addiction
Tuesday?
Is not.
Do you want to start with a specific sport? I got lots
to. No, you choose. You choose.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
You're in charge of the text line.
Okay. Wow.
That was too much.
Yeah. Like just a comment from a high school teacher in Mississauga. As much as we support our students to follow their dreams, it's technically our job to suggest a plan B, whether it's an academic dream or athletic dream. We wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't. That's in
imagine
relation
he wrote the
to
opposite, where he's like,
my A-list today.
Sometimes kids are really good at sports, man. we say, hey, put the book down, all right? Go throw those heaters. Like, well, thank you. That was the ultimate straw man. A teacher was like, we support education. Thank you, Teach.
Yeah. One day I'll go through the list of people who told me not to do this.
Yeah, they were all smart.
Okay, here's one. Didn't put your name. Like, I get upset every time. Good morning, my favorite radio morning show. I want to put your basketball knowledge to the test. In 10 seconds, name your top 5 all-stars ever that you would have on your dream team. Go. Seriously, Simp time, go.
Wait, say it
wait,
again.
He just wants like our top 5?
Yes. In 10 seconds, name your top 5 all-stars ever that you would have on your dream team. Go. And then he wrote, seriously, simp time. Basketball.
Oh, basketball.
God, I mean, it's not really a knowledge test. It's an opinion test. Like, obviously, you're going to have MJ.
Said 10 seconds.
Yeah, you're going to have MJ at the 2, LeBron at the 3, Tim Duncan at the 4.
Shaq
at the 5, and then probably.
Gary Payton.
Yeah, Gary Payton. I would say Magic Johnson, but you can make an Oscar Robertson case. You can make a couple cases. You can put LeBron at point if you really want to get someone else in there. But
I actually do believe Gary Payton's like one of the most underrated players in NBA history because he's like the only point guard to ever win Defensive Player of the Year.
You're talking about Gary Payton too, right? The Golden State Warriors standout who won G League Defensive Player of the Year last year.
Did he actually?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice little legacy play. I actually love seeing Gary Payton too do things. I didn't realize that he was like that athletic. And it also spurs this conversation of did the Raptors blow it by not keeping this guy somehow? Because here's what I'll tell you. He's better than Delano Banton. And Delano Banton's the first guy off the bench.
Did you get a chance to read this? So I do this series every year with the name changed a couple times, which is frustrating for an annual series. But last year I did like The Art of the Steal with Gary Payton too. And like we broke down film together on Zoom for like half an hour.
That's really cool. I didn't see that. Send me that link. I'll watch that.
Okay, next on
it was written, and we didn't spin it as video content.
Send me that link. I'll read it.
Okay, so we're going from basketball to curling. Chad from Peterborough. Okay. Team McEwen looks like a force at the curling trials. They're currently undefeated, and you can still get them at plus 1,200 to win it all. Huge value. You buying that?
Are you?
My mind.
Yeah, like that's, you brought it up.
Chad from Peterborough, thanks for the tip. That'll pay for my chips.
Nah, I don't know. Team McEwen... they got a weird vibe to them. Ooh. They're all like three of the four guys are like very well manicured, which is...
God forbid.
Well, I
that's why I like that team.
I don't know. I like a little grit with my curlers. I don't have the standings in front of me is the issue.
But. I really want to curl. I just want to curl. I want to be in a curling league. I want to be a part of it, but I can't get people. It's shockingly expensive to become a member of a club. Like shockingly. And they're like, oh, you can use it at any time. I'm like, yeah, but then I got to go because that doesn't cover your gear. Like, then I still got to buy the shoes. I got to get my broom. I got to get my curling outfit so I don't look like a total
just
loser.
Just wear your hockey skates.
No, you don't wear skates to curl.
Just kidding. Like, okay, from curling to WWE.
I don't know if you're kidding there. That would
be smart.
Yes.
Okay, curling to WWE. Mm-hmm. What is Blake's take on WWE airing Rock promos and highlights every 20 minutes at Survivor Series, hyping up the crowd and viewers for an appearance only for a complete no-show, Mike and Brampton.
Yeah, it's a tough one not to upset another partner here. But
let's get Blake fired.
Yeah, so I think, for context, it was the 25th anniversary of The Rock's debut at Survivor Series. And the hope was that The Rock would show up. And then the closest thing to The Rock showing up that they had, other than all the promos they played in flashbacks, was... there was like integrated content for The Rock's new Netflix movie Red Notice with Ryan Reynolds, and that was really weird. It was
where the ad show today.
Like Vince McMahon got his egg stolen, like his golden egg. I don't know. That's the tie-in to The Rock's movie. But yeah, The Rock didn't show up because he's out of the country filming something else. Yeah, I mean, I think in the future you just be straightforward with that about like. Yeah, The Rock's not coming. But even this is how wrestling fans work is if they were like, yeah, The Rock's not going to be here, but we're going to honor him. Everyone would be like, oh, they're just saying that. So we're surprised when The Rock comes. There's no win there.
Okay.
He's your most important, one of your most important stars ever. You gotta celebrate the 25th anniversary.
Okay.
Wait, it was the 25th anniversary. That's what it was?
Of The Rock's debut.
The Rock's debut. God, where were you?
Oh, yeah, they have to do that.
We talked about that last week.
You know, I remember.
When you were away.
No, I talked about it because I mentioned how I'm tired of The Rock story being portrayed as the ultimate rags-to-riches tale.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
This guy, it wasn't exactly like
you were really upset
impoverished with traits and
nepotism and the genetic lottery.
Yeah, exactly. It was like
the chiseled man.
Yeah. I mean, I've read some features about like what his day is like and stuff, and it's crazy.
Yeah, he's like, I have to eat a lot of food and work out. It's crazy.
Sounds like us.
And then I go around and everyone loves me and I got my social media team and then everyone loves me more. And then I go to an event and everyone loves me. Boy, I'm so tired of it all. And then I get my residuals from Fast and the Furious. Boy.
If The Rock is listening to this, please believe that at the next break, I'm going to rock bottom JD through a table for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
My God.
Here's the thing. If The Rock ever talked to me, I'd be like, oh my God, it's The Rock. I'd cry.
You'd simp for him.
I'd simp for him.
Vin Diesel sucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always said, like, yeah, you could still tell Vin Diesel's
enough
not that
with
tall,
the voices. You know? That's my thing. Oh. Next on the text line Tuesday, is Pascal more comparable to Mitch or Willie in terms of his love-hate relationship with the fans?
Definitely more comparable to Mitch Marner. William Nylander has the benefit of not being, like, he makes, what, half of what Marner
right,
does?
Right,
and that's,
right.
That's so much of the discussion around Marner and Siakam is, hey, you probably paid both of those guys a hair more than you needed to, and maybe those negotiations weren't, like, the Raptors, obviously the Marner thing is like, hey, had you got it done earlier or had you negotiated better, you could have got it, maybe could have got him cheaper. And Siakam, it's like, well, there was really no need for you to throw in that 3% supermax kicker. So, yeah, I definitely think it's closer to Marner. Mm-hmm.
Who gets it worse, Marner?
Yeah, I mean, Marner's also better, though. So that's, and like the Leafs have higher expectations. So that's where that comes in.
You agree? Oh.
I don't know. Like, it's funny because these parallels are always so much in the eye of the beholder. But when you first said it, if I was just doing the, like, quick trigger thing, I would have said Nylander. Because Nylander's thing is still inconsistencies. And it's been sort of the under the surface, hey, the Leafs are kicking ass, so don't say anything bad about them. But, like, Nylander's scoring is completely dried up. He's not scoring 5-on-5. He has not been the same offensive threat that he was at the beginning of the season where the guy was, like, driving the team. And that's cool because, again, the team is winning and he's not expected to be the number one player on the team. And that's how I feel about Siakam is, like, Siakam is an all-time beloved player when he's the number three on a team or maybe even the number four on a championship team. I would argue that Siakam was the number four during the championship run. I think it went Kawhi 1, Gasol 2, Lowry 3, and Siakam 4.
But you get Lowry and Gasol in the wrong order there.
That's how I saw it. When I rewatched those championship games over and over and over again, I kept my number one takeaway from almost every game was, wow, Gasol had way more of an impact than I thought. Maybe.
Yeah, he was.
I'll split hairs with it. Yeah. I'll put Lowry ahead of him, sure, just so I don't have you weirdos in my Twitter mentions.
Weirdos.
But I think Siakam was the number four most important player in the championship run. And there were some nights where he was the number two. There were some nights where he was higher than the number four. But if I'm grading it all out, Siakam was four. And now he has to be a number one. And I think that some nights he can really look like that. And then some nights he doesn't. And that frustrates people. The thing is that, again, because there is so much sports to digest and so much content out there, I don't think that a lot of people watch the other sports and see all the other players and realize, like, hey, having a guy on a max contract who's one of the best 35, 36, 7, 8, 9 players, he's definitely a top 40 player. Like, the lowest you could possibly put him is top 40. And I would say the highest that you could rate him, like, is somewhere in the high 20s. Or, sorry, like, low. How do you do that? High 20s? Like, yeah,
low,
high 20s.
Low 20s would be, like, 21.
No, high 20s. Okay. There's no way he cracks top 25. I'm sorry. There's 0% chance that you could ever make a list that he's top 25 player in the NBA right now. But if you put him at, like, 28, I wouldn't. 29, I'm not laughing you out of the room. If you put him at 38, 39, I'm also not laughing you out of the room. If you really wanted me to do this, I can just run down players that you would 100% rather have than him, but I'm not going to do that. But it just, he reminds me a little bit more like Nylander, where it's like, when he's going, everybody loves him, and everyone goes, wow, is this guy underrated? And when he's going poorly, people go, hey, is he consistent enough to be a driver? So I don't think the vitriol is the same, but I also actually, like, I'm not as close to it as Blake, and I stay out of the social media stuff as much as I possibly can when it comes to, like, reading what people have to say about guys or the extremes of it. I also don't think that it helps Siakam that, like, that Raptors Twitter is comprised of so many people that are, like, constantly trying to tell you that the Raptors are better than they are. Like, that there's no, like, there's not a lot of realism to Raptors Twitter. It's like either way overhyping something, like the Raps, who are like, you know, probably a bottom 12 team this year, or there's, like, they're way worse than they are. And it just, it feels like it's not the best place to have conversations about the team. People are always like, the identity of that group really took on the whole, like, the Raptors are disrespected thing. And you don't know how to kind of separate that from reality sometimes.
Speaking of the Raptors, here's a question from Jordan and Saga.
Jordo.
Jordan texts in a lot because he always says Jordan and Saga. So shout out to
this
loyal
is not
listener.
Your brother, Jordan.
No, my brother does not live in Saga. He never texts
don't
in the show.
Don't say it like that, like Saga's bad.
Yeah, you've turned on Bing Bonga so quickly.
Yeah, no. Wow. Nice breakdown on pace stat in basketball, Blake. Always pictured the amount of running teams did, but now I know. Thanks. Answer this one. Does Nick Nurse enjoy playing games bordering on lying on the Raptors injury report? Is it gamesmanship by Nick?
So this is something that I've always had a bit of an issue with, just from like a what's the point standpoint. Like, I don't actually care that, hey, you bumped OG to questionable when probably there was never a chance he was going to play. Or, I mean, this predates Nick Nurse too. Like, there was 1 year Patrick Patterson was day to day for like 17 straight games missed and then had offseason knee surgery. Mm-hmm. This isn't new. I completely understand the level of gamesmanship involved if it's a playoff series and you don't want to. Like, I remember the NBA Finals when everyone was talking about when and if Kevin Durant could possibly return. Obviously, that turned out horribly, but there was so much smoke and mirrors being leaked from the Warriors side. And I think it's because a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, you have very, very different game plans if Kevin Durant is playing and if he's not. So you almost force an opponent to do double the work. In a playoff series, every tiny little marginal thing matters. So I'm all for it. I understand it more. Mm-hmm. In the regular season, like, you're playing at Memphis on Wednesday in game, 19 of 82. I don't really see the point in being, cloak and daggers about it. Now, I will say Nick Nurse has been a little better for pregame media, the 90 minutes before tip-off. He's just telling us the starters and who's in and who's out. He's not doing the game time decision stuff this year. But yeah, I am taking anything he says at practice with a giant grain of salt.
Okay, so we got triple texted in by Ryan in Guelph. He's also a frequent texter.
Triples is best.
Triples is best. Two of them are about food, so I'm going to skip those. But just saw how well Kadri is doing this year. Still hurts. Kerfoot is playing well for the Leafs, but gosh, every year we are reminded how crippling that trade was. P.S. I usually miss the first hour or two of this show, but the last little bit, my kids have been waking me up at 3 and 5 a.m., so I'm tuning in for the start of the show for the first time today. Not a question, but I did want to talk about how Kadri is lighting up the league. You have that stat that JD DM'd us? It was like he's got, I don't know, pace for like 112 points.
He's on pace for 126 points, which isn't going to happen. But yeah, like he's
just maybe found his own there.
So one of my favorite Twitter accounts, Jake Beliefs, which is somebody who I feel like if I didn't work here, that's how I would tweet about the Leafs.
Well, you might not work here soon, eh?
I know. Thanks to Blake. Thanks a lot, Blake. I'll see you at the widget factory. So I saw him tweet last night, like, is Kadri better than Tavares legitimately? And I don't think that. I think that's a bit of a stretch. Like, having not watching Kadri every single night and seeing these numbers. But I do wonder sometimes, not if Tavares is not as good, but had the Leafs just decided to say, like, if Tavares never comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs, if he rejects them and he goes back to the Islanders, there's no moving of Kadri. And yeah, just I wonder what that money gets used for. I wonder how the team gets built out differently. Mm. I wonder if Matthews is captain or Riley is captain and just, yeah, how the roster shakes out differently. It's just, it's an all-time what if. And the problem with it is like, I don't think Tavares is better than, or Kadri's better than Tavares. But I do think that if we're talking about like salaries over the last couple of seasons, what does Kadri make? 4.5?
4.5 and pending free agent.
Yeah, sure. Now.
Get him
like
back.
100 years later.
No, I know. I'm just saying that that's sometimes a good thing.
Yeah. I'm just saying like right now, imagine the Leafs are on this run where they had Kadri this entire time and all the extra money that comes around it. It really does change. I don't think that, honestly, I don't even think it's a conversation about Marner, Matthews, Nylander's money if Tavares isn't here, because there's no fourth forward. It's not the core four. It's those young three guys that get too much. And
so you have know. When you take, so say no Tavares, and then obviously you don't have Kerfoot either if you don't make that trade. It's an extra $10 million.
Yeah, and also though, just the signing of Tavares immediately changed things from like this is a young developing team to this team is supposed to win today.
Having said that, you signed Tavares a million times out of a million. But it's cool to see Kadri having such a good season. I always really liked him. I have a very fond memory of when he was first drafted and was still playing with the London Knights.
Uh-huh.
I was living in Kitchener at the time, and my dad would want to go see anytime London was in Kitchener because he wanted to go see Nazem Kadri. So we would go. That's it.
What
it's
do you
a,
think?
It's not a great story.
What? Don't undercut your own story. What do you think? Like, if you had a time machine, knowing everything we know right now,
that's tough.
Do you like leave Tavares at the altar? I would. I don't think that you do.
I don't. I think there's still more that will come, and it'll be when we reflect at the end of his career, we'll be happy that the Leafs signed him and what he brought to this team. But
remember, this is knowing what we all know now, which is the Leafs have not won a single playoff series since they signed Tavares. They look good right now, but I'm just saying that
if I don't like this question,
I'd rather just play out the window with the extra $11 million and having Nazem Kadri doing Nazem Kadri things.
But he wasn't doing Nazem Kadri things on the Leafs like he is now. He was getting
pretty damn good.
He was getting bad playoff penalties. And that's what the narrative was every time.
He got one last year, too. Yeah. He doesn't seem to learn there, and it's a hard thing. Hey, I was even in the camp of in the moment, I thought the Leafs needed to finally move off of Kadri, and they needed to find a defenseman. They needed to balance their blue line. The problem is that they made a trade that on paper looked good, but then we realized none of us watch Colorado Avalanche games and that our GM probably should have watched more of them because
a couple games here and there. Right?
Tyson Barrie goes down as like an all-time bad Maple Leaf, like truly, like that season, that experience. I think about it. They were all in for a championship still that year, and I was openly advocating for them to trade him for a second-round pick at the deadline, saying, please, recoup something for this guy because he's killing you. Ugh, now I'm getting PTSD about the stat nerds telling me Tyson Barrie was good here. Ugh.
Do we have time for one more quick one?
Oh, yeah.
All right. For Text Line Tuesday, Blake, did you see the fan attack on Seth Rollins? How does that happen? Seth got absolutely smoked.
Seth Rollins.
Rollins. Oh. Sorry, I'm not up to date with...
So sorry.
This is definitely a wrestler, I assume.
Yeah, yes.
If someone's getting attacked, I hope it's a wrestler.
So remember I showed you the picture of Roman from Succession with Becky Lynch? Becky Lynch's husband.
Oh, okay,
or,
cool.
I don't know if they're married, but they're together. So he's a fan jumped the barricade and like full on tackled them before. And he did it like kind of from a side.
Real fan did this?
Yeah.
Like this like wasn't someone, scripted?
No, like someone hopped the barricade and like security's all over him. And Rollins is like taking some shots at him. And this is like the height of stupidity. There was a big thing the other year where Bret Hart was being honored and someone did that. And they're called FTR now in AEW, but they were called the Revival in WWE at the time. And they just went to town on this fan for coming at Bret Hart. And it was amazing. Like, you see, like, cell phone footage of as this guy is being taken out by security, they're, like, still landing shots on him.
Wow.
Because how dare you do that to Bret Hart, of all people. But, yeah, the Seth Rollins thing was, it's extremely weird. I didn't see it live. I only saw the tweets about it, but... very bizarre and not a...
How do they not have better security in something like
because
that?
Because it's just like a barricade. Like, you can't have security everywhere. Hmm. You just work under the assumption that dummies aren't going to hop the barricade and come at, you know, these guys.
Listen, now it's my turn to potentially get fired. There's nothing I love more than, like, an idiot doing idiot things and then getting the ever-living crap kicked out of them. And I just, I can't wait to see this. Like... You know, it just...
Like someone streaks the field and they get absolutely dummied.
Oh, yeah. Like, so good.
That's, Or instant karma. You love it.
Sorry, bouncers out there. Don't hold this against me as I, you know, try to come
Anthony
back
Stewart.
Into different places. But no, but I hate bouncers. And they're almost always in the wrong. But there is something to, like, even those videos where it's like a guy takes a swing at a bouncer, you're like, oh man, this is gonna be bad. And then it is. And it's funny. It's funny to me. I think it's funny watching dumb people get beat the hell out of.
I just sent you the justly. YouTube one of the Bret Hart one because it's way better. The Seth Rollins one is kind of shaky cam footage. But
we'll take
a
break and then we'll watch that and we'll come back.
Yeah.
Let's watch this guy
sprint.
Get borderline murdered.
Yeah. Don't attack. There was one in AEW not that long ago, too, where Jericho like potatoed him, like full on just him, just like hit him with the straight fist. And the guy just, there was a visual cue there, guys.
I like that.
Visual cues on audio form.
Yeah. He punched him in the face. He's potatoed him.
Yeah.
Like, but punched him flush is what he meant to say.